The following program is brought to you by the producers and the sponsors.
A member of the Beasley Broadcast Group, this is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.
Happy birthday, America, from Tube Talk. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the Boston Pops Orchestra. Arthur Fiedler conducting. That is a RCA living stereo recording from 1958, recorded right here in Symphony Hall in Boston. And for those of you who may have been to Symphony Hall, you know, it's an iconic forum. That's all I can say for music in America. The attempt was made to create a acoustically perfect building, a box within a box. If you ever have a chance and you're into acoustics or sound, read a little bit about the construction and the theories involved in the construction of Symphony Hall in Boston. A remarkable story, a remarkable gift to us, the Boston Pops. And you may be hearing them a little bit more over the various media here over the next few days here. They do a big hoedown for the 4th of July, and we do love the Pops. We unroll that flag when they do the Stars and Stripes Forever. A great piece of music right here on Tube Talk. This is your source for quality vintage music and informative conversations concerning the world of antique radio. We hope you join us every week for another adventure, and believe me, for every show I do is an adventure, right here on WRCA 1330 AM and streaming on the WRCA 1330 AM website. And let's keep the patriotic theme going here a little bit. So, Patty, Maxine, Laverne, let's get going, girls.
You're the dream boy of the sweetest story ever told. A dream I sought both night and day. 4 years through all the USA. The star I've hitched my wagon to is very obviously you.
Yeah, that's the Andrews Sisters doing a George and Ira Gershwin song. What could be more American than that? And a great way to celebrate. Happy birthday, America. You know, and the Andrews Sisters really, you know, sort of bring back a lot of World War II memories, I know, for a lot of folks, because all the different shows they did for the troops, and just a lot of patriotic themed songs. And if you're going to Radio Fest out in Chicago, you can see the Legacy Girls help you relive the magic that was the Andrews Sisters. So, friends, let's talk. Have you ever looked at that radio restoration project you've just finished and think that it's just missing something? Is it that piece of upholstery fabric you used for the grill cloth that you just ripped off Uncle Al's easy chair? It just doesn't do that project justice, does it? The solution, friends, to this problem is RichmondDesignsInc.com. Kenneth Richmond Designs is your source for quality, original look, replacement grill cloth. And now the Zenith Swirl Paradin is here. Oh boy, it doesn't get any better than this. So to get the best factory look for your set, check out all the cloth available at richmonddesignsinc.com. And, you know, there's a lot of other neat photos and information about Kenny Richmond's business on that site, too. You can see some of the fantastic projects he's worked on. And remember, we need to support those in the hobby who care enough to provide us with high-quality goods for our projects. That's richmonddesignsinc.com. You won't be disappointed. Your radio will never look the same. And if you wonder, you know, how I got the idea that somebody might actually take fabric upholstery from a chair and use it for a radio, I did it. You know, I was 14 at the time, but what did I know then? Art Tatum at the piano. What could be more American than jazz? Interestingly enough, if you followed Art Tatum or interested in that realm of piano jazz, actually started playing a violin and gave that up in favor of the piano. And interestingly enough, imagine this, after appearing on an amateur radio show, he was offered his first professional piano job with station WSPD. See, it all starts and ends here with radio, folks. Before we head down to the interview room tonight, let's sneak in a little bit more music, shall we, Maestro? Please.
Let the drums roll out. Let the trumpet call, while the people shout, strike up the band. Hear the cymbals ring, call them one and all, to the marshals swing, strike up the band. There is work to be done, let's have fun, fun, fun. You son of a gun, take your stand. Fall in line, oh, come on, let's go. Hey leader, strike up.
son of a gun of a gun, take your stand. All right, oh, come on, let's go. Hey, Mr. Leader, hey, Mr. Leader, please take up the
Sidney Bechet. Before that, we had a little Tony Bennett. So, you know, I think we're about ready. Let's saunter on down the hallway here. See who's in the comfy, cozy radio parlor tonight. And believe me, it is cozy. It's about 103 in there. So we've got the Dayton fan going. Tube Talk goes north of the border tonight. And our guest is from the great province of Quebec in Canada. Dan Gervais joins us tonight. He is with the SQCRA. Dan, we appreciate you coming on tonight.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul. It's really nice for you to invite us, and I'm really happy to participate in your show. I've listened to a couple of them, and I'm really impressed about, you know, what you're doing and that, so it's really fun for us to do it.
Well, one of our goals here is we try to connect the hobby a little bit. It can be a hard thing to do with so many different clubs and people from all corners of, you know, the U.S. and in many cases all over the world who like to collect and restore. So it's nice that they have a place they can tune in and thanks for being on. It's nice that they can hear people from all over. So that was our goal here tonight. Now, I am not going to, as we talked a little bit before coming on, make an attempt here. You are with the SQCRA, and why don't you give us the full name of the radio society up there?
So in French, it's the Société des collectionneurs de radio antique du Québec.
Okay, very good. Which is essentially the Quebec Antique Radio Society, is it?
That's right. Yeah.
So that works for us down here in Boston. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, We always like to try to get a little feel. How did you get interested in antique radio yourself? How did you get in the hobby? What turned you down the road to being interested in antique radio, I guess we'd say?
Well, I guess that, it started when I was a young kid. I remember tuning into my grandpa's Marconi radio, and believe it or not, it was working at that time, and I fiddled with it, and I tried to improve it, and I got it into a non-working state.
Well, you know, that's a story that I think a lot of us share right off the bat.
Yeah, and I guess I was 7 at that time, and so the radio stayed there for, I guess, 30-somewhat years, and I was a project engineer, and I was doing a project, and I was using a farmer's old equipment to help us with the plant, and he had an old radio in his barn. So I saw that radio, and I said, hey, that looks like my grandpa's radio. And he said, yeah, you want it? So I picked it up, and next thing you knew, I put it in my car, and I brought it home, and I didn't know what to do with it. And so I looked it up, looked up on the internet, and I found this club right close to where I live. And I joined a club, and there's really dedicated people in there who help you figure out, you know, how the radio works and the electronics of it. And really, that's what got me started. Before that, I didn't have a clue how the radio, the AM, how you modulate and all that. I didn't have a clue how that worked. Reading, schematics, I didn't, know that. So the club really helped me to get from a point where I didn't know anything to a point where now I can restore and actually help others, on their first-time restorations.
Yeah, that's great. And it's just another reason that we try to talk up your local antique radio club for people who have a little interest or might even, be lucky to have a radio that was in the family, something like that, and they'd like to work on it, but they don't quite know where to start. They're a little intimidated by the whole thing. Local clubs can really be a great way to go. Now, yourself, you're right in Montreal, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about how many members. Do you have a head count for how many folks are in your club up there?
Yeah, it varies a little bit, but our head count right now, I believe, is about 104.
Very good.
So it varies from 90 to 100 and closer. We don't lose a lot of membership, but and we try hard to, bring in new members, and especially young members, especially... this year we're going to try and do some improvements on our club's website. We're going to also try and do our workshops and webcast them to try and reach out, a different type of audience, hopefully a younger one that will, help and propagate our what we're doing.
It's a common issue. We are down here a graying hobby, I guess. Maybe one of the reasons I like it is I'm kind of viewed as a young guy, which is pretty cool, because I don't really view myself as such. But there's a lot of folks who, were into radio, from being in the service in World War II or Korea or working on it as a profession, in a TV or radio repair shop or in some connection to it. And, they're getting up there in years, and some of them are moving on and passing away. And so we're always looking for new folks, a little younger, interested in radios and the programming that they can listen to with their set. So now you guys have a very interesting contest, and this is what it caught my eye way back. I think I saw something in Antique Radio Classified on this. It was a it was an invitation for either groups or individuals who wanted to put an entry into your competition for this restoration contest that you've been running. And my friend Rich Lee down in New Jersey said, this just is a great thing. And I know some of the clubs have put in entries, and he sounded real excited about it. So he hooked up with Serge, who suggested we get a hold of you and get into this a little bit, try to share what's going on with this contest. Maybe we can get you some more entries. I don't know. We'll have to see if
sure.
If the conversation
sure.
Spurs anybody else on to do one. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about this. How did it get started? Was it a particular person's idea, or did you guys come up with this idea as a group, or how did it come into being?
Yeah. Well, to understand our international restoration contest, you have to go back to the roots of it, which was our local restoration contest. Serge, who was heading our international contest, he started it in our club back in 2003. That was our first time, and and the minding in there was you need to bring in a basket case, and really it was to save a radio from a dumpster. And so if you go on our site, there is a section that deals with every restoration contest that we did throughout the years. And so really that's we've been running through that, and we've done it since 2003. And 2 years ago, Serge came up with the idea of, let's have an international one and see what comes up with this, And the response from that has just been amazing. This is a thing we started, and we didn't really know to what extent, how much impact it would have.
Sure.
And really, right now we're talking, we wouldn't if this hadn't been doing. We're putting clubs throughout the continents, there's five continents in our international restoration contest, so that's really amazing, because then you see what others are doing. You can see that, we all share the same passion, and there's lots of passionate people throughout the globe who have, they want to restore radios and bring them back. So the idea stemmed 2 years ago from Serge. So the original intent, we still have the same intent, is that we basically have a set of rules, and so each club has a restoration contest on its own. And within that, there is a winner that's elected.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take all these winners from all these clubs, and you bring them back together, and then within them, they're judged on their presentation and what work they've done, and then you nominate one that's the overall winner from all these first place in the respective clubs.
Yeah, and as I was mentioning to you, I looked over, you have on the website, and it's www.sqcra.org. You have information on the entries, so I pulled up one, and I'm looking at the before and the after, and then you have a narrative of the steps. People will submit not only the photographs, but they might tell you from the beginning to end what we had to do to get this set back and working.
Right.
And I guess one of the things that I really like about it is, for somebody who, I marvel at the work that goes into some sets, and not just the cabinet alone is a huge task in some cases, and then put it in the electronics. And the contest really challenges somebody to not only, do the job, but then to document every step, and so the judges up there can actually see, well, wow, this was an incredible effort, and it's close, but we're going to give it to Serge here because, he documented this so well. I mean, we know everything that went into it, all the blood, sweat, and tears. So it of rewards people for being very detailed, and it's a great insight into what it takes to build these sets back into their former glory. So just that alone, to me, I think is very impressive. And then you folks get to see the entries. So people physically ship these up to you with their photographs, and is that how it works?
No, they don't ship the radios. You see, and this is where you have to do some sort of a trade-in. And so basically the people, they send their presentations.
I see.
To every club. Well, basically what we do is so everyone who was a first place in their local club,
mm-hmm.
they make a presentation. And then that presentation gets put in on our website.
Okay.
And then the other clubs pick that presentation off. They use the same template for the point, for the scorecard.
Okay.
And then they score the presentation. Now, you have to, there's a, we don't see the radios themselves, right? And then so the club has to present the radios in a fair way. So there's a certain amount of fair play in there, obviously, because we don't actually see the radios up close. So, they take pictures, and sometimes you'll get a video off of it. People will dump a video on YouTube, and so you can hear the radio functioning.
Mm-hmm.
We do our best, to score the radio based on the presentation. So every club will pick that presentation off, and then score, evaluate them, and put their numbers in the scorecard. So every club has to score everybody else.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, do you notice that you receive entries from more from one country or from one part of the world than others, or where have some of these entries come from?
Well, if you look on our website, and this is the amazing thing, like you would think that most of them would come from the States and Canada, but
mm-hmm.
it's when you do this thing, you realize, hey, we're not alone. You know, and if you thought you were good at restoring radios, well, guess what? There's other people out there who are just as imaginative to find other ways of doing things, and it's from that respect, it's just incredible. And so we get a diversity. I think we have some people from Belgium, Italy. We have some people from France. You know, two entries from Canada, one in the States. So there's really no one area that's more represented than others.
Sure, a nice blend.
It's a beautiful blend, and you know, it's so to call it an international restoration contest really is true to its word, because really, you know, we have five continents, eight entries. You know, so it's a very good mix of, you know, of what's being done out there. You know, the you know, now I'm thinking about, you know, Eastern Bloc or Germany. There's no entries from there yet. You know, but or say South Africa, or maybe, and we even have one from Australia. Think of that. I mean, we have people from every part of the globe.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and it is interesting to get an idea. You know, one of the things I constantly marvel at when I go to, even if it's a show here and you know, a swap meet, you talk to somebody, they tell you how they did something. Sometimes you'll find things that come up, you know, a process or a technique or overcoming a problem with an antique radio restoration that is so incredibly simple on the surface, it eludes you. You know, you would never
right.
think of that. And someone will tell you, well, this is how I achieved this look or got this result. And you sit back and you say, why didn't I think of that? I've been banging, I'm trying to figure that out. And so from an information sharing point of view, you know, even if nobody, you know, came out with the top prize, just to share the knowledge and to get to look at all the effort and how different wow. people approach the restoration. I mean, those are all very positive things. I mean, everybody really, I think, is a winner when you look at it from that way, because you know, there's a great deal of knowledge that gets exchanged, and not only that, it's great to see what some people can do with these radios that, as you were saying, look like they're ready to go out, you know, in the dumpster, but here
right.
they are in their back. So you know, it's fascinating, and you're right about all the radio collectors out there, because it's easy. You know, we locally see the same guys we hang around with or we chat with, but you know, sometimes we'll email friends or we have people throughout the country, and so there are a lot of people interested. But you know, for example, we were doing it in Antique Radio Classified for a little while. They would put an index in the back of all the different radio clubs worldwide with a contact. And as you look through there, you see all of these different places. Well, we'll have to get an entry in from everywhere in the index, because we'll get your contest going. But the bigger it gets, though, the more interesting it becomes, because you might see a set that does not come from your part of the world, or you don't get exposed to that. So to see somebody else do it, you know, is very, very interesting. So what is the response of your club, Ben, to this? I mean, this obviously is an exciting thing. I mean, is this the biggest event you guys have all year?
Well, actually, you know, it's, I guess from the outside, it's a big event, but really our big event is our annual picnic that we do in September, where we, you know, we do our presentation of our local restoration contest.
So, I see.
That's our big event of the year. The other, you know, the International Restoration Contest is really a sum of all the work. So, you know, Serge's work, actually, of putting all this, you know, together, is sort of like he works in the background, you know, and sort of the unknown heroes in there, and bringing all this information back to surface, really. But you know, the great thing about our contest is that, you know, like it brings people together. You find out that, you know, we're not in the same boat, and a lot of people, you know, like to do this sort of thing. And then right now, you know, we're looking at this one of the restorations from Europe. You look at how the radio was built, and you realize that Europeans don't build the radios the same as they would have been in North America. So the restoration techniques used in there are different than what we're used to seeing.
Yes, yes.
You know, so, you know, here in the States, you'll typically see a Philco block being recapped, but you won't see that in a French radio, you know.
Yeah, you know, this is something that, and maybe you can shed some light on this with me. This is something that's always kind of fascinated me, and I don't own, even from, you know, a U.S. manufacturer that had products in Canada. I'll see frequently advertised, you know, sets that will be, this is a, you know, Westinghouse Canada, or
right.
you know, a set that has a manufacturer that might be from the States, but the set itself was manufactured in Canada, and it's from the 30s or 40s. And you know, one guy in particular I know of who sells these will say, he goes, you know the respect I have for Canadian manufacture. And apparently, from what he's telling some of the folks who are prospective buyers of his sets, that the radio manufacturing industry early on in Canada was, and I don't know if it was like an underwriter's laboratory thing, or there was some type of a government regulation or standards that were involved. And in many cases, the point he was trying to make is that some of these Canadian sets are very well built, may even be better built than some of the U.S. counterparts were. Do you have any feel for that? I mean, for early radios that seemed to be put together a little more solidly, or was it how did they regulate that? Was it something you're familiar with?
No, I'm not that familiar in that area. I know that I think all radio manufacturers at one point in time needed the cost, you know, to cut the cost.
Mm-hmm.
But whether they were, you know, better built in Canada, I'm not at all that sure. I think we have a member in our club who was working at Northern Telecom, and we have this internal joke, Northern Electric, sorry. That, you know, we say Northern Electrics were badly built, but you get these wicked circuits in there, and they're only in Canada. You know, they only seem to be found on his set, so
that's
we
interesting.
Make jokes about that. We have a guy who's working for Westinghouse, so we obviously make jokes about Canadian Westinghouse, you know. So I'm not sure if there's so much truth to that. You know, of course,
we
hold the Canadian radios dear because, you know, there are only so many builds.
Right.
You know, and so we try, like, I know a fair amount of our club members try and restore Canadian set because there's not, you know, there's a lot of them out there, but not that many when
right.
we consider the whole bunch. Yeah.
Right. And you know, again, I'm not real familiar with the demographics of Canada, but, you know, generally in the States, you know, I'll talk to people. For example, I was speaking with a fellow from Texas not long ago. I said, "Do you find a lot of sets down your way?" And he goes, "You know, not as many as you would think," because he said, you know, especially in the 30s and 40s, yes, there were people in Texas, but it wasn't, you know, the state had not grown to the extent of it is today, with the Dallas-Fort Worth area being, you know, like a small country almost. So he said the radios really were clustered around the bigger cities that had higher populations in those days, was his comment. So maybe much the same up in Canada.
Well, you know, in Canada, you know, really the radio manufacturing, Montreal for one, and Toronto, Montreal had a fair amount of has a lot of radio history. You know, Northern Electric was here, and Big Man at Marconi was here. Out in Toronto, you had Rogers. You know,
mm-hmm.
And so these were big manufacturers. So there's a fair amount of history in Montreal and Toronto. Kitchener had Electrohome, which was a Canadian manufacturer. So there's a fair amount of history in the radio, and I think I'm not quite sure, but I think some of it has to do with the fact that these companies set up here to evade patents in the States.
Yeah, that could be true too. That's an interesting point. Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't know if you have a feel for this or not, but you have no idea how many U.S. antique radio collectors love Toronto because they like to listen to AM 740, Zuma Radio, which comes out. And, you know, they've always had such a nice blend of older music, and they have old-time radio on. I think it's on at 10 o'clock at night. And you can, you know, on a good night with good propagation, depending on where you are down here, it comes in great. So, you know, we all admire, you know, some of the programming that we get out of Canada. Is there programming to listen to on the AM band? I mean, other than talk and news and sports, because we have a lot of that in the States. Is there still some musical programming and anything else that's of interest to you guys to test your sets on?
Yeah, well, there are some good stations in Montreal. I believe it's, I forget the channel, but I listen to it. It's a multi-ethnic radio station. And there's good music on there, but and sometimes they'll have some jazz on it, but it depends on what time and what hour you're listening to. There's maybe about five or six, three good stations, and the rest is at night, then you can pick up some more distance ones, but not too many left.
Yeah, that's a constant theme. I used to get a station, and I don't even know what happened to it anymore, to be honest. I used to pick up 940, which was out of Montreal, I believe. And for a while, they did a news format, and I would enjoy it just because it was something different to listen to. And I don't pick up much of anything at 940 anymore. I don't know if they went off the air or if just something happened in, you know, my particular area where I'm, you know, having, you know, more trouble picking it up than I used to. And you know, occasionally I'll pick up, I think it's 7:30, and I'm not sure where 7:30 is out of, if it's up in the Maritimes, but I can hear the French language, and occasionally I'll hear hockey broadcast on that, but I'm sometimes hard-pressed to figure out who's playing.
Yeah. Well, you know, in one of our workshops that we do every 3 months, so we were doing a thing on AM transmitters, and, you know, of course, hockey is big in Canada, right?
So yes, it is.
We happen to be listening to a Montreal Canadian game against Boston, I believe.
Oh.
And so for the last 3 minutes, if you can imagine a round table about, you know, 10, 15 guys, we're transmitting from I believe it was an iPod or something, and shooting it to the AM transmitter and
yep.
listening to an Italian radio.
Very cool.
A Montreal Canadian game in an overtime game. So it was just like, it was great, great nostalgic right there.
That's very cool. And, you know, one of the things that is one of my personal pet peeves that I you know, we have it down here in Boston. Obviously, if you're familiar with baseball, the Red Sox play in Boston, and they've moved their signal. Their flagship used to be 850 AM, which was a big 50,000-watt transmitter out of the greater Boston area. And, I mean, you heard that throughout the Northeast, and you might even pick it up in Canada, for all I know, on a good night. And they've put it on an FM, you know, frequency now, which is fine, and it does, you know, sound a little bit better, but you just don't have that coverage. And it was great when sports teams, especially, you know, just like in the old days, in the 30s and 40s, a major market sports team was on a big 50,000-watt AM station. Well, you get yeah. people all over the Midwest who would listen to the St. Louis Cardinals, you know, in the U.S., because they could
right.
pick it up, and, you know, on a good set, it would come in great. And now you have to get a little creative like you guys were. And I know a lot of people who have fun with the AM transmitters, either picking something up off the net or, you know, picking something up off FM maybe even and feeding it into the AM transmitter and playing it in their house. So it's a nice way to enjoy your set.
Well, that's right. I mean, at some point in time, if you want to enjoy your old radios and, you know, like if you have somebody come in and you just want to make them play right then and now.
Sure.
Shoot on. But if you want to have real fun and you wait till, you know, night comes by and then you turn on your old AM set and then you see what you can pick up and then you get the real fun out of it.
Yeah, and I think many people, you know, many casual observers who just might see something in your living room and say, gee, oh, I admire that. That's a nice piece of woodwork. Or they might like the cabinet and they don't quite understand the technology that sits in that cabinet. But when you can play, here's Chicago, here's Philadelphia, here's New York, and you
right.
know you're 800, 1,000 miles away. They say, well,
right.
you know, I guess they did know what they were doing back then when they made those sets. So just
and then you switch it over to a short wave band, and then you tell them, well, right now we're listening to China or Spain, and they're just amazed.
Yeah, I know. It is a neat way to get them into the hobby. Maybe we can get them to join our clubs. And I have to say, it's been a great conversation about this great contest you run. And to learn a little bit more about, you know, how radio clubs work on the other side of the border, it's enlightening. And you're right; it's you are not alone. You may not be the only other guy who's got 140 radios stuffed in the stuffed in the spare bedroom somewhere in various states of disrepair and getting yelled at by your significant other about the way. It happens all over the world, folks. We can assure you, whether they're speaking English or French, they're all getting
I'm sure, out of here
or make it get it fixed and sell some, will you, please? There's no room.
But there's no room in here.
I know. That's a universal problem. Dan, I have to say thanks so much for being on the show tonight. It's been great to have you on. I appreciate it. And good luck up there in Montreal. I hope you get some more members. And we'll stay tuned here down on the contest to see who wins. Maybe we can have you back on and we'll talk about the winner next time you guys
go through it. Yeah, we're going
to
call you and try and get somebody from your club to submit.
Well, you know, the New England Antique Radio Club, we'll approach this with the guys and we'll have to get them to step up to the plate. We've got some talented people and see if we can put something together that might get us a chance in the contest. Dan, thanks so much for being on. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we'd like to thank Dan Gervais for coming on and telling us about that great contest they run up in Quebec. And nice to hear about a perspective on the hobby from the other side of the border. You are not alone, radio collectors. We are all over the world. And thanks to all our friends in Canada for sharing a little bit about their club with us tonight as well.
Nothing's plenty for me. I got no car, got no mule, I got no misery. The folks with plenty of plenty got a lock on the door. Afraid somebody's a gonna rob him while he's out to making more. What for? I got no lock on the door, that's no way to be. Can steal a rug from the floor, that's okay with me, cause the things that I prize, like the stars in the skies, are all free. I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got my gal, got my song, got a heaven to hold it long. Got my gal, got my Lord, got my song. Seems with plenty, you sure gotta worry how to keep the devil away. Monday door, that's no way to be. They can steal a rug from the floor, that's okay with me, cause the things that I prize, like the stars in the skies, are all free. I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got my gal, got my song, got heaven to hold it long. Got my gal, got my Lord, got my song.
I got plenty of nothing right up between my ears for me. But that's Kenny Gardner, and he had a very nifty song, is what he's got, and a great voice, and just another great piece of the American songbook. Thank you so much for tuning in to Tube Talk this week, my friends. Tell your friends, tell everybody you know in the hobby, have them tune in. We're here, WRCA 1330 AM, and streaming on the WRCA 1330 AM website. Check us out at TubeTalkClassicRadioShow.org. Email the show, TubeTalk1@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. We appreciate your feedback and your listenership.
Thank you. Listen to WRCA online.
1330WRCA.com.